Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 259, featuring a really cool person that I met at THU, Andrea Blasic. Amazing guy. He is a sculptor, Kristen, right?
Mm-hmm. Amazing sculptor.
Amazing sculptor. Mm-hmm. He does this for four feature films. Believe it or not, there is actually the art of sculpting, and I'm talking about real sculpting with your hands. You make maquettes. You make all kinds of things that are used in even in animation that are used for that, used for reference, used for design, concept design, etc. You think that today a lot of people would do everything in CG. They would do it all in ZBrush, but Andrea doesn't think that way.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really cool, right?
Yeah, that was, I had no idea, yeah, that the 2D would watch what he does to make their stuff awesome.
Right.
So, yeah, that was really interesting, that whole, when he goes into depth about that.
Right. And it's not to say that he doesn't do things in CG. He does. He can model in ZBrush and he can do all kinds of other things. And sometimes he'd do that and then 3D print it. But somehow the actual three-dimensional object is very important when he's looking at things and involve a lot of decision-making process. So really cool guy. What he does at THU, by the way, yes, this was recorded in Malta earlier this year. I think this is the last one of our THU episodes,
I think,
right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I recorded a whole bunch. So I've saved this one for the end, which is a really cool one. He actually would sit in the gallery and sculpt and teach people how to sculpt all day long. And I have some pictures of the sculpture. So if you guys go to the podcast page, Kristen, maybe we can add it to the podcast page of some of those maquettes and clay models that they were creating while we were there. So really cool stuff. I kind of liked it. So let's see. Anything new? What's going on in the event side of things?
All right. Well, we have Total Chaos coming up in May 2020.
Yep.
It is 2020.
It is 2020.
Wow, I can't believe it. Yeah. Okay. So, and you can find all the information at chaosgroup.com/events.
Yep.
And this one is going to be May 29th to 31st. And the website for this actual event is also at chaosgroup.com/totalchaos. And you can keep following us and find out more about the amazing speakers coming to Total Chaos. And we're getting more and more each week. So it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it will be amazing. Actually, what I'm really, really happy about is if you guys look at all the speakers, there's some incredible speakers that have already been announced, many more to come. So keep going back to that page if you want to see the new speakers that are going on. I think they might have lost out on the super early bird special, but there's still going to be some new special tickets available. So go check that out. It's a lot of fun. This is the third time that we're doing the big Total Chaos conference. And every time we do it, it tends to get a little bit bigger and more special. So I don't think this year is going to be any exception to that, right?
Mm-mm.
Cool. We don't really have any big product updates coming out or that we can talk about just yet, but more will be coming. So stay tuned for that. And I'm sure to let you know on the podcast. If people want to follow the podcast, where can they go, Kristen?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Yep.
Or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And of course, if they'd like to email us with ideas, questions, or comments, where can they go?
labs@chaosgroup.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. With that, please enjoy this incredible podcast. Really cool guy, Andrea. Love to have him back if you can.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Thank you for doing this. I loved your work last year.
Thank
when
you.
I came
Thanks
last year and I saw all your sculptures and the way you were teaching and I think it's really important to be a teacher and a mentor and to teach people some new things.
It's not easy.
No, it's not easy, right?
No, so for me it was more almost like a develop, you know, of the kind of try to find a way out to teach people the view, how I see, how I thinking when I'm doing my rough sketches, you know, they can be for feature, for movies,
right,
or my personal stuff. So it was more like a it grew slowly, and then I start to enjoy. I'm still doing because I'm getting energy to do stuff for myself through
right.
this lecture.
Right.
And to see that people they are really interested on what I'm doing, it kind of give me the motivation to keep doing. You know. And lately, this year I did 5 or 6 workshops.
Uh-huh.
So I did one in Sweden. It kind of allowed me even to teach people to travel around.
Uh-huh.
To go around, I went to Sweden, I went to Russia, you know, I'm going to go to London in November.
Wow.
Do a workshop for a company. So it kind of has a pro and, you know, as a lot of pro
sure.
teaching people. So and especially because I can go see museums during the time, so I can get more inspiration for future pieces.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's really interesting.
Do you like doing that? Do you like going to museums and stuff?
Yeah, I love to do museums.
Yeah.
I love, especially coming even to Malta, you know, it's amazing to just feel the environment, feel the, you know, the space, you know, the history of the on design. It's incredible. And when you look around, you see shapes or you see buildings that can give you influence, you know, can give you some certain
right.
kind of inspiration for forms, you know, especially sculpture, it's all about form, shape, silhouette and so on.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so I obviously do want to talk about your medium and sculpture a lot and how you think things have changed for you with, you know, technology and how traditional things are
yeah.
work, et cetera. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about your origin story. Like what even as a youngest child, what got you into liking to do art and doing sculpture?
But my mom reminds me that a long time ago I was you know when I was a kid I was playing with the sand in the south of Italy. There was like a certain kind of clay, argilla,
uh-huh.
natural argilla. So I started to create forms when I was on the beach. You know, so I started to play with the stuff. They play maybe with piece of stones that you could carve easily.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously, I was, you know, coming from Italy, I was immersed in this kind of environment with museum, all this history that we have. So I was really influenced about this kind of environment. And this
sure.
kind of brought me to explore more
uh-huh.
in different direction, and then it kind of brought me to study art, go to the art school and then do the Academy of Art. And then when I was in theater, I studied theater, but
okay.
basically I start to move more toward animation because I kind of like moving images.
Okay.
At the time when I started was like a 2D animation.
Uh-huh.
CG animation wasn't even there.
Right.
Yet. So I start to analyze how to do movies in 2D. So we were studying with friends some movies from the, you know, the old Disney movies, try to dissect and try to understand how to achieve this kind of result.
Okay.
And then I did a small animation school in Milan, and then I start to travel around, like in festival, like this one.
Uh-huh.
Start to meet people, start to meet companies, show the portfolio, show a certain, like a collection of drawing, because at the time I didn't know what was a portfolio.
Right.
And then through that, you know, I was able to go to London, work on the first movie. So you start to get...
What was your first movie?
I work on Bolto.
Oh, Bolt.
Yeah, Bolto. No, Bolto.
Bolto.
Bolt is 1994.
In
London, yeah, an animation. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I moved from Milan, I went to London. It was the first time that I did this kind of move, change of country.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we were still in Europe, but, you know, it was a different environment, different language.
Yeah.
And so I was really immersed. And then at the time, Ambulmation was moving to Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
It was becoming DreamWorks.
Yes.
So I tried to get to the kind of boat, but I didn't get through because you know there were no spots. So then, but that one kind of allowed me to go to Munich. So
okay.
I worked in Munich for 1.5 year, another studio, and then I'm back to London, and then finally, you know, I was able to go to Los Angeles to work for DreamWorks.
Oh,
97,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was really nice because it was at the beginning of the studio, so there was this kind of
but what were, what were you doing for the animation?
I was doing traditional layout.
Traditional layout.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, I studied theater, and then I discovered that theater and staging for animation was pretty much the same.
Oh,
the
right.
Same thinking.
Okay.
Because you know, in theater, it's a three-dimensional space, but you are thinking b-dimensional because you work on the paper, you set everything on paper.
Right.
So you try to achieve something three-dimensional, and
of course.
In animation, it was the opposite. You try to have something 3D dimensional, but on a 2D surface.
Right.
So it was kind of fascinating to think, to have the same thinking behind.
Right.
So it was pretty cool. And then obviously, you know, when I was there, when I was in DreamWorks, I started to meet designers, mm-hmm. start to look around. The beauty of working in a big studio that you can meet in different departments, different artists from all around the world.
Sure.
And you know, I met Carlos Grangel, that is one of the speakers here, and then you know, we became really good friends. Started to work on some of the characters.
Which
on Spirit? Spirit.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Simon. Yeah, it was like a pretty ambitious project because it was realistic but stylized at the same time.
Okay.
And in 2D.
Yes.
So the animators need the sculpt, the maquette we call maquette, uh-huh. like a three-dimensional object to take as a reference for drawings.
Right.
For you know, when you have a different angle, like upshot or downshot, so the animator uses the three-dimensional object to help them drawing.
It's the reference.
It's like a reference, yeah. At the time, it was reference.
Okay.
And then it became more like a reference for a CG modeler later, because we were scanning the maquette.
Right.
So you scan the 3D traditional surface.
Okay.
Like a 3D object, and then it become materialized in the computer.
The computer. So okay. So but
this came later.
This came later, right?
Later, yeah.
So but you were doing layout mostly.
I was doing layout, and then right. You know, obviously, when you enter in a studio, it's difficult to change department.
Okay.
So I have to build up a portfolio of sculpture.
When did you start sculpting? Besides you being a kid on the beach,
I started when I was at the art school in Milan.
Ah, okay.
I did traditional sculpting, like figurative sculpture.
Okay.
So I started anatomy, and then you know, we were doing live drawing, modeling, you know, 3D modeling
right.
with the model,
right?
With the live model. So and then you know, but the passion was always there. You know, it's still always there.
Okay.
And then I wanted to do like a sculpt master.
Uh huh.
But at the time, there was not a lot of opportunity, and then there weren't really good teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go more toward theater.
Okay, yeah.
But then when I came to United States, I saw there was a demand for like a physical sculpture.
Yes.
So I kind of pushed in that direction. And since 2000, I'm
right.
doing sculpting for movies, video games,
right.
personal sculpture. So I do different, now CG, obviously, I use ZBrush.
So you went back to sculpting, and you're like, there are people, a lot of people that may not understand, like, you know, sculpting and how that helps in animation. We'd mentioned reference at
yeah.
some point, but and obviously, but that is an important part of the beginning of things, right?
When I started, it was really important because the studio really believed in this kind of first step. Because
right.
basically, it's one of the character design. So the director has they have an idea, a vision. So they express this vision to the character designer.
Sure.
And then the character designer is the guy that he draw the characters, but on 2D, on paper.
Right.
And then at the time, you have to take these 2D drawings and then change it in a 3D form. So this was when I was starting to work directly with the character designer,
okay.
the art director, the production designer, start to feel the character in a real form.
Right.
And then obviously they were approving the three-dimensional object, and then they were passing to the animators.
Right.
This was an really important step to visualize, to concrete, to make, to decide exactly, okay, this is the right direction or this is not the right direction, because you were exploring
sure.
during the creation of the character.
Right.
So it could develop in another direction because they didn't think about that solution.
Right.
So you can explore a different solution.
Yeah.
And usually, sometimes I do even different takes.
Right.
So one, you know, maybe the face is a bit more elongated, the other one's more squashed.
Mm-hmm.
So the director can pick. Or maybe they say, okay, pick a little bit of this one, a little bit of that. So you have to do this kind of collage. Sometimes when you do a collage, it's difficult to make sure that everything is uniform, everything has an harmony.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the kind of challenging but tricky part to accomplish.
Right.
So some projects are more problematic because maybe there is no clear vision. Other, you have a clear vision, so you can go faster. So there are different steps. Each one of the projects that I work, they were pretty interesting to
right.
accomplish. And because of the result, they were completely different. that is pretty, it's kind of cool, you know, but more what I'm looking is more the collaboration, especially with the years that you are doing, you know, I'm doing this since almost like 25 years, plus more than 25. So I meet all these artists, and the nice things when you gain the trust, because they really respect what you can bring on the table.
But you there's a lot of discussion that happens around
there
sculpture.
Is a discussion, and then there is a lot of experimenting too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the first collaboration.
Right.
And it's really nice when I see that they can start to see. So you can start to see, they open the eyes and they start to feel it. They start to imagine how the movie is going to be.
Right.
Now it was kind of cool, especially in Spider-Man, the last movie, I worked in 2017 and then it came out last November. And I haven't seen the movie since then.
Right.
Because I was working on the first Spider-Man, the characters and everything. And then the designer told me, Andrea, go see the movie because, you know, you're going to see your sculpture moving.
Right.
On the screen. So, yeah, come on. I said, no, go see. So I went there. I was really blown away, you know.
Yeah.
It was really a big surprise. Usually it's the opposite.
Right.
They don't translate what you achieve on the.
But they think, you think they were faithful to your sculptures?
They were really faithful because we use a process that I start to implement in my pipeline now when I work for studio.
Okay.
So we scan the sculpt.
Uh-huh.
And they rebuild the character based on the sculpt. So on the CG data.
Right.
That we provide to the CG modeler.
So why do you think that? For you, what's important to you about doing traditional sculpting of maquettes compared to just going ahead and doing it in ZBrush?
You can do digital. For example, in Spider-Man, they called me back because they started digitally,
right.
But then they weren't happy because
they couldn't
find. So the designer asked to work with me to resolve this kind of problem, and we did it. You know.
Do you think the problem is the fact that it's digital, or do you think that it's
difficult for the director, for the production to see it? In real life, because when you have a real object, you can lit it.
Right.
The director can touch it. Sometimes I use, when I see the director or the production, the character, they're not there yet.
Right.
I let them sculpt on top of my sculpt, so
okay.
they own more the sculpture.
Oh, interesting.
So it's easy for me to get approved because they get attached to the object. But then they start to see from the beginning. You know?
So it's touching it.
It's the tactile things. And then,
you can still bring it back on the computer.
You can bring it back, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then you can always, now with the 3D printing, so you can do changes. So, for example, if they don't like the size of the, maybe the head is a little bit too big, so you can scan it, and then print it out, reduce it the size that they like. You can swap the heads.
Right.
So it become more like a process that you work together. It's going back to the origin, you know.
Right.
Even when Michelangelo, Bernini, they were proposing something, they were doing a bozzetto, like a little maquette of the fountain or the monument.
Right.
To sell to the committant.
Yeah, it's like a sketch, right?
It's like a sketch. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think it's easier to see directly in physically than in the computer. Even if we have maybe with the VR, for example, the next step is when I scan the stuff, I send it to the company. They can see visualize in VR.
Ah, right.
Because they can see there. It's almost like if I'm there, you know.
Right. But the other thing is scale, right? So if it's a really big monster in VR, you can see it at scale.
But usually when I scan, I scale one-to-one to the real maquette.
To the real maquette.
So they can even bring it to the set and scale everything based on the maquette.
Oh, okay.
So they can, it's almost one-to-one.
Right.
And they can see exactly the size that I'm using.
Right.
When I send to clients. And I noticed that, for Sony and even Netflix, lately they use the scan data. They start to use more and more the scan data that I provide.
Okay.
And until this year, because I bought this scanner this year, and the resolution is really, really close.
What kind of scanner is it?
It's a scanner is on the market.
It's a laser scanner of some
kind. It's a laser scanner.
So is it the kind that you handhold?
No, it's basically a photographic scanner.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the quality is really, really good.
Right.
It's quite really good.
So photogrammetry type scanner.
Photogrammetry scanner, yeah.
Oh.
And it's really good.
I think it's interesting that photogrammetry is becoming so good, right?
It's better than the laser. Yeah, because
really?
I think so, yeah.
And you can get...
there are two cameras and then one source of light.
Right.
So you have this kind of three-dimensional almost surface.
Right.
And it's really, really, in the patching, I don't do manually anything. So everything is really, 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 really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that you still use your traditional methods. Are you more comfortable with using?
I like digital too, but it's not the same feeling.
Right.
No, I know Scott is doing an amazing mod.
Do you feel you're faster sculpting by hand?
Yeah, I think I'm faster. Yeah, especially when I do this kind of live demo, you know, I sketch a character in half an hour.
Right.
Even people that do CG, you know, for 20 years, you know, they say, you know, we can do something this fast and sell the idea this fast.
Right.
And it's true because, you know, even a sketch, you know, if you start to give the pose, the twist in the life, the director can start to see
right
faster than in CG.
Yeah.
If you're fast, it's faster than CG.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's true. But what got you so fast? Do you think it's because obviously years and years of experience?
No, it's the experience. And then when I do lecture, I show my mental approach when I do my own stuff.
Okay.
So even if I do stuff for movies, I use obviously a drawing because you have to follow a certain style, certain drawing.
Right.
But then even when I do that one, I try to use the same approach, the same thinking, the same fluidity.
Yeah.
And then I start to measure, you know. But the first approach should be really spontaneous.
Okay.
And I think if you get that one, if you get the what you feel inside, it's more to transfer what you feel inside on into the clay.
Right. Okay.
I don't know if it's easy, but it's almost when you paint, you know, you do the blocking and you're ready with the blocking of the brush stroke, you can see where you're gonna go.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's and then start simpler, obviously. Try to find the simplicity of everything, and then you go deeper, you get more complex.
Right.
Put more details, you know, later.
Yeah.
So it's more like to transfer this energy that you have inside, you know, your thinking.
That's
like a musician, and when you start to play music, and then you get into the zone, and then you go with the flow.
Right.
Pretty much find the flow.
Okay.
And obviously, it's coming with experience, with your knowledge, your culture.
Sure.
No, you absorb from different culture.
Do you think that there's a lot of benefit for people who are doing character design animation to look to traditional sculpting?
I think so, yeah. It's like when you paint, but you don't know how to paint traditionally.
Right.
You use only Photoshop.
Right.
A good painter should be able to be a good digital painter, but you should go from the this I call foundation. You know?
Right.
You need to know the foundation, and then you can push it.
Yeah.
But for example, I'm going to teach, usually I teach in companies too.
Yeah.
And I can see that the CG model, they don't have a traditional background.
Right.
And you can see the struggling, even to understand the form.
Yeah.
To me, it's a little bit strange because you know, to be a model, you should know how to translate the forms, the planes, the lines, you know, the shapes.
Right.
And sometimes people, they work, they are professional, they have problems. Most of the time, people, they don't even do this kind of, they are not CG model. They can do better than a CG model in traditional.
Right.
It happened a couple of times. It was kind of fun.
So you think, it's not just you who can do a sketch in 30 minutes. The practice of doing it that way allows.
No, it's the practice, and then transfer the emotion, or your own emotion, you know.
Yeah.
Because everybody's pretty emotional.
Yeah.
If you're in this kind of zone, I'm getting this kind of zone, this kind of feeling. I'm the character that I'm sculpting.
But you're also, I think, is probably because you're touching it too, right?
You can't,
it's hard to physically touch things.
For example, in CG, when with the VR, mm-hmm. if when we get to the point that we have the friction in mm-hmm. VR, that we can put the gloves, you can feel, it's going to be really, really close.
Okay.
But I use the VR for more than a week. I did this one time. I told Goro, I did this kind of VR stuff, and then I put it beside because I was doing this stuff, and then I said, but why am I doing something that fakes the three-dimensionality?
Right.
When I can do the three-dimensionality.
Right.
I can do the real sculpt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Why use all this technology to pretend you're doing something that you can just do?
That I can do in the traditional, you know.
Right.
I can do the real three-dimensional object. And it's more, to me, it's more, I'm not against the technology. I think, you know, for example, the scanner is going to help me in my pipeline a lot. You know?
Well, it's the brush, fastest way for you to transfer that data.
To transfer, yeah. Right? It's more like, like you said, it's the fastest way to transfer an idea.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
It doesn't you know, the tool is, it's a tool, you know, even when you draw, or you draw with a Cintiq or with a Wacom, you know.
Right.
It's the same thinking to use the pen, but I use the pen, you know.
Right.
Especially because it kind of forces you to commit with the stroke. While mm-hmm. you have the Cintiq or the Apple pen, you can erase, you can control Z.
Right.
Sculpt, you don't control Z. Because you know when you make a stroke, it's the stroke.
Right.
That you
can. But if you're using clay, you can.
No, with the clay too. Because if you do a stroke, you know, and then you decide to change it, you can go back to the stroke that you want.
Right.
You know, you're gonna to the first stroke.
Yeah, and it's even worse if you're doing like you know marble
especially
sculpting.
Marble. But marble, they were starting with the maquette, with the sketch. They don't go free form, you know.
No, of course not. Yeah.
It's not gonna come out anything.
Can you imagine?
No, Michelangelo was doing it. You can see that sometimes the sculpture were going in a different direction, the proportion.
Right.
But because maybe he got to a point of his career that he didn't care, you know.
Right.
He was going with his gut. You know?
Yeah.
And I think they are the more interesting sculpt that he did, latest period, you know.
Yeah, that's true. So besides doing maquettes and doing your sketches and doing stuff that you're scanning, do you actually go beyond that and do your own personal sculpting?
I do my personal sculpting. Usually, when I'm working on 3-4 different sculptures at a time.
Right.
So usually, maybe I have like a commission or work for studio, and then I have my personal piece there.
Uh-huh.
Because I like to jump from one to the other one.
Right.
So I can kind of get my brain fresh.
Yes.
And then go back so I can see where there are the mistakes.
Uh-huh.
In my studio, I have like maybe 30 sculptures that I started like 6 years ago.
Right.
The arch of 6 years, and sometimes you leave it there in the shelf, and then you want to go back. Sometimes you go back and you kind of screwed up everything because the sculpture was already done.
Right.
Even if it was rough, what you wanted to express was already accomplished.
Right.
And it's kind of strange. It's kind of funny to see this way how you work.
Right.
So maybe it was just an idea you want to express, and that's it.
Right.
It's like when you do a little sketch,
uh-huh.
or you want to keep going with the sketch and do the final piece.
Right.
Sometimes it happens.
Yep.
Obviously, when you do commission, you have to finish the piece.
Sure.
But lately, even the studio, I noticed they want to have, they like the roughness of my sculpture.
Uh-huh.
And they want to keep the sculpture with this kind of roughness.
Okay.
Maybe it gives more life to the characters.
Got it.
This is why I'm doing my sculpture more rough, you know, because I like more like a sketch.
Yeah, I did sense, because I've seen a lot of your sculptures and I've seen them, you know, very finished pieces, and then I've seen the ones that are just like you still see the thumb marks and the little, and it looks more alive sometimes. I can sense that.
Yeah, personally, I think they are more alive, you know?
Because it's almost as if you can feel the motion,
the tension of you doing it.
Right? The other ones feel way more still.
Yeah, but then obviously, you know, if you do for a studio, they ask you to clean it up. Let's say clean it up, bring it to the final, to the super clean surface, because maybe they need it for. Marketing or for scanning, so I understand you. So you have to bring it to the next level.
Right.
To me, it's the kind of I don't like to do the kind of really meticulous measure a lot. You know.
Right.
A lot of measurement.
It's
hard. It's really tedious.
It must be hard because you want to keep.
You can do it.
But you want to keep the original version, so you can't like copy it and then continue going.
Especially when I work in a project, I don't have the name of the director, but. No, I did a sketch, and then he said, okay, now you have to clean it up, and he told me, you know, don't fuck it up. So what do you mean? No, don't lose the freshness, this freshness that we were saying when you clean it up. So it was really difficult to, at the time I didn't understand what it was meaning.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized that, you know, this freshness that you respond, I respond to,
mm-hmm.
but obviously when you work on a stop motion, on a puppet,
yep.
you need to have the surface really clean.
Yep.
So that was the reason why he asked me to do cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, it's really difficult to don't lose all. Maybe each smaller stroke, it can change completely the silhouette of the tension that we were saying before,
right.
of the sculpture, of the character,
right.
of the nostril. You know, maybe even the line of the mouth could change the expression.
Right.
If you clean the wrong one.
Yeah.
So that was an important lesson at the time. So, but it's even nice when you go super smooth, so you become more graphic.
Right.
More almost like a car, you know. You like the lines of the shapes.
Okay.
when it's something stylized, you know.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was actually thinking about that. Like, they used, in the car design, they used to do a lot of clay models, yeah. Right? They don't do them anymore.
No, they scan it, yeah.
They
3D print.
They 3D print, yeah. They scan it, or they actually just look at it all on the computer.
The computer, yeah.
Because it's very expensive to do sculpts, yeah. You know. It sounds like character, you do mostly character, right? Do you do environment?
Do more characters and environmental, no. No, I did for a personal project. I built a set.
Really?
Yeah, because when I did theater, I was building sets. So I would be building small 1 to 10 scale models.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of like to do that because everything has to be kind of design.
Yeah.
So for my... I'm working on a personal project like a stop motion, so I build the characters and then the set has to be in size with the character, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I did it with plaster, so I build it's almost like building a set in theater, like
right.
A facade of a building, but it's flat, there's nothing behind.
Uh-huh,
so
uh-huh.
You fake that there's something behind, so it's like, it was really, really interesting, you know. It's a different mindset, but it's pretty much the same plan.
Okay.
How you do the characters with the environment.
Right.
I'm attacking. I'm approaching the two in the same way.
Okay.
Like I'm approaching the CG when I do CG the same way I'm approaching traditional sculpture.
Okay.
For this, I was telling you, I think it's important for a model to know how to sculpt, because it can help you in your workflow in CG.
Yeah.
What do you to visualize? You know.
Besides obviously tactile problems and all the other issues, what are some of the other lessons that you think that people lose if they go all digital when they're sculpting?
I think it's more like the because the problem, there is a problematic to build a sculpture, you know, to give a structure. Because
right.
In CG, you know, you build a character, but you don't have the weight.
The gravity.
The gravity.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So here you have to accomplish the gravity. And with the gravity, obviously, there are certain solutions that you can do, that in CG you can do.
Right.
For example, you can do a sculpt that is jumping.
Right.
So you have to think how the sculpt is going to physically support with the jumping.
Right.
Know? So, for example, now I'm working on a sculpt that the guy is jumping, so I came up with the kind of idea for a base that mm-hmm. is integrated with the character.
Right.
That doesn't look, doesn't take off your view of the guy jumping,
mm-hmm.
but support the guy's jumping. I
right.
don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah, 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 of course
but,
it does.
So it's so the problematic of the structure, and then, you know, the way how you resolve the... The shape, the silhouette, because it has to be good from different view.
Yes.
And in CG, sometimes I know it because I print some CG stuff that mm-hmm. I did, and then when you print it, I feel that in clay I would have maybe pushed a little bit more the proportion, pushed a little bit more the angle, pushed a little bit more, maybe the legs a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you don't see, it looks more natural.
Yep.
But so those are things that I notice, you know, between CG and traditional sculpture.
You think
and
people sculpt mostly from a certain point of view and they don't?
Yeah, because you know, from one view and then, but then you try to make it work.
Right.
From the other side. Sometimes, you know, you miss something on the other view. That
right.
Maybe you achieved on the view of the drawing, but the other view, they're a little bit weak.
Yes.
So you have to emphasize those different views.
Do you think
and that in traditionally,
because you're
easier.
Moving around.
Yeah, because you're moving around. You know,
right.
Even when I do a quick sketch, I'm moving around, you know, I go around faster. You do the same in CG.
Sure.
But it's different.
Yeah.
The way how you spin around the sculpt is different than when you spin the sculpt in the computer.
Right.
Because it's a monitor. It's a 3D space, but it's on a monitor.
It's still a monitor.
On a flat surface.
Right.
Here we are moving around, like the microphone, we can go around.
Right.
You can see how the microphone is, in, you know, the microphone that we use now, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Has a different shape, different view, different, you know, planes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's one thing that is missing. With the VR, it's nice, but then even the angle is, you know, because the angle of the VR is
uh-huh.
really open, really,
yes.
really wide angle. It's different from our angle. Everything looks really distorted. So you have to step back, reduce it.
You can't actually get as close in VR because it's actually not good for your vision,
yeah.
right? So you always have
so
to look
have
at
to,
you have to look at something that's at a distance
yeah,
all the time.
Certain distance. For example, yeah. when I was sculpting VR, I was sculpting small.
Yeah.
So you can control more the shape.
Yeah.
You know, even when I do the bigger shape and then start to go down. But the bigger shape has to be readable
mm-hmm.
and has to be stronger, you know. When you
yeah.
have the strong shape, I think 80% of the sculpt is there.
Right.
Drawing or sculpt or anything.
Yeah.
Even paint, you know, you see the big, the master, they it's all about silhouette, shapes, balance, harmony.
Yeah.
For this element and they get together and then you put the details. When I do classes, I see people, they start with maybe try to redefine the hands. And, do the every. Because if you spend too much time in one area and then you don't like it, and then maybe it doesn't make sense with the rest of the body because you just start from the wrong point.
Right.
Not from the overall shape.
So you're always thinking about the larger
shape. Yeah, the larger shape, the pose, the twisting, the torsion, the way how the character is interacting with other characters or with himself in the environment.
Right.
Because even the way, let's say, character is sitting, you can sit in a different way. A different way you tell different stories.
Sure.
So I'm thinking all this stuff, the clothing, the way are you, what kind of clothing you're using.
Right.
The clothing can help you with the line of force, with the direction of the view that you want to bring the spectator to see one particular area of the
sculpture. Right.
So all these things, they become all one piece that is your final piece.
Right.
But I use all these things together, you know.
What's your favorite part of doing the sculpting?
It's the first, maybe the first 10, 15 minutes when I start to see it.
Oh, because it's,
I like that.
You start to see it.
When I start to see, I can transfer what I have in my mind, then become, then it's just a matter of finalize, redefine, you know. Most of the sketches, I noticed that later when I do this kind of lecture, it's like 30 minutes.
Right.
In 30 minutes, you know, I get to the point that it kind of satisfies.
Right.
My.
And then the rest is just
And then the rest
detail.
Is just, you know, yeah.
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 But seeing that larger shape.
I like that.
Does it feel alive to you, right?
Especially when I see the life, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when I start to see, when I do the lecture, you know, I put chunk of clay all together and then the audience, the people that are looking, they're looking, what is doing? And then when it's funny when I start to see that they start to see what I'm
going. Oh, their
where
eyes
going,
change, right.
They start to change the expression, they start to get it.
Right.
That is fun. It's nice. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, I'm sure. So when you were doing, obviously, character stuff, you obviously studied a lot of anatomy, I'm assuming.
Study anatomy, you know. I don't remember all the name like Scott, but, you know, but I know where the insertion are, where the major, you know, muscles go, you know. Because I met a lot of people that they know all the names, they know, but they don't know how to apply. It's more not the anatomy, but you have to know how to apply to your use, you know.
Sure.
To what, if you're a painter, or if you do realistic, you know, you have to know.
Right.
Basic anatomy, you know. Maybe not everything, but, you know, you should know.
Right.
It's like I told you before, it's a foundation.
It's a foundation.
It's a foundation, yeah.
Right.
And then use anatomy to push it. Even when I did Spider-Man, it's a kind of realistic stylized.
Right.
So you have to know where to stylize the muscle.
Right.
Where to push more one muscle and maybe the other one you push less or become like a different shapes because it's all about shapes. So even anatomy, it's all about intersection of shapes.
Yep.
Even the tendon, muscle, you know, and then the balance. So it's all a matter to find the proportion, find the how to break. It's like you know the rules, but you break the rules.
Right.
And then that I think is when you get the interesting things. No, I like super realism. It's nice, the realism, but everybody can, no, not everybody, but you can achieve more a realistic look than a stylized realistic look.
Sure.
Because you have to, it's more complex, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's...
This is my opinion. You know, I respect all the people that they can do super, you know, really incredible stuff. And then you say, is it CG or is it, it's kind of nice, you know, but... To me, I'm more attracted to from people that they can push the boundary and they can go further. They can discover other things with anatomy.
Okay.
If I'm talking about anatomy, it's more like about the shape, the overall.
Yeah.
The emotional, the this power. Even Bernini was doing a realistic, super realistic sculpt at the time, but you can see there is a graphiness in his marbles. The David, you know,
yeah.
It's almost like a curve from some point, it's almost a one completely curve because it's the force that you want to push on the human body.
Right.
And it's pretty modern.
Yeah.
If you think about when he did in the 1600.
Yeah.
It looks more, almost like a modern sculpture. Or Michelangelo, the one of the La Pietà, the Rondani, the last one, is really pushed.
Yeah.
But it's a realistic body.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of cool when you when you break this kind of a rule, and then you realize you still compared to a realistic.
Right. What I also think is very interesting and hard to convey is cloth.
Yeah.
Cloth is very, like you were mentioning Pietà, it's like the cloth is incredible and that it feels soft even though it's made of a hard marble, you know?
That is technique, you know? That is a lot of technique. You have to know, obviously, how the cloth is reacting to the body.
Mm-hmm.
But their models, you know, they were using real cloth in the model and then, rework it.
Yeah.
Or sketch. Just the way of the cloth is on the body and then re-emulate in the sculpt.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there is a lot of study, you know, from real models.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's a lot of things, you know, technique, ability to, try to catch the right corner of the wrinkles.
Okay.
If you do, it's like I was telling before with the
lips.
The lips.
Right.
If you do the wrong fold, it doesn't look natural, you know.
Or looks too stiff.
Right. So it, that is the ability of the sculptor.
Right.
To make everything kind of harmonical, you know, it's like with harmony, and then get to the point. Maybe the expression, maybe you want to push more on the folding. Maybe in the sculpt, the fold is the important stuff. The sculpture that you see, there's like a a drapery all on the face, but you see the pulling of the drapery.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool process, you know.
Yeah.
And each sculptor did in a different way.
Yeah.
I do the fold in a way. Another guy can do the fold in another way.
Yeah.
So it's pretty.
What's your secret to doing fold? I mean, do you look at reference of class?
Yeah. For example, I work on Brave, and then we have to do Brave for Pixar.
Right.
So we have to. It was a Scottish movie, so they had the kilt.
Yes.
So to do a kilt, you need to know how is a real kilt. So we had the mannequin, and they were dressing the mannequin in a way they dressed themselves with the kilt.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks to the real kilt, we were able to sculpt the kilt.
Right.
So you try to analyze how the big folding is going to the smaller folding.
Right.
How the weight of the skirt is going with the upper part of the kilt.
Right.
You know the thickness of the fabric.
Yes.
So you have to think about that and your wool. You know.
Yeah, because cotton is different.
It's
a very thick skirt.
Yeah. So you have to think about that and try to transfer it in your stylized maquette.
Right.
So we are looking for a realistic kilt, and then we do a kind of stylized kilt.
Right.
But it has to be believable that it's the real kilt. So it's kind of challenging, you know. It's kind of it's kind of cool too, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And obviously it's a step, because then you give your sculpt to the guy who does the real material.
Right.
In CG, so they use the sculpt. They try to see how you did the folding. They try to emulate that one in CG.
Sure.
You pass the ball, you know. It's kind of if it starts.
But they're starting with something good, right?
Yeah. If it's good, it's going to be even more. It's an improvement. It should be an improvement. You know?
Right. And I'm sure the same is for hair. Hair is
for
also
hair for all the stuff.
Yeah. Because Brave, stuff. Obviously, there was a lot.
Over the for example, sometimes they I work on Ice Age 2, and I did the fur of this big water buffalo, and they asked me to. So I did in a certain way because Peter DeSeb was the designer. So he did a really sketchy fur. So I kind of stylized the fur, and the material, the fur guy, you know, they really like the way I did it, and they try to emulate the same. So sometimes you are an inspiration for the next guy, you know.
Right.
And then it's kind of cool because, you know, when you see that your idea of the fur, it kind of get to the screen.
Right.
It's pretty cool feeling, you know. Really.
Do you still want to do more animation or get more animation?
I'm working. I work for two movies now.
Okay.
For two different companies, and but it's more that it's, for me, it's more the collaboration. Working with the designer, try to give something different, something new. But obviously, you always hope that each movie is different from the other. It can kind of influence the industry doing different things. For example, Spider-Man, I think we push the boundary, and I can see my sculpture on the screen. It's one of the few movies that I can really see the translation of the real sculpt in a CG form.
Okay.
And it was really satisfying.
Why do you think that one worked more than others?
Because I think that the designer from the beginning really pushed to go in this direction, really pushed this kind of plan. Okay, let's do the sculpt. We scan the sculpt and then we translate the sculpt, because we decide that the sculpt is the style. We translate into the movie.
Was he more involved in the...
He was involved in the main characters, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The goblin, the green goblin, and because if you see the sculpt of the green goblin, is 98% the sculpt that I did.
Interesting.
And they were able to... And obviously, it depended on the will of the CG model too.
Okay.
Of the production designer, say, okay, let's do that one.
Sure.
Because, you know, most of the time, everybody has a kind of certain ego. So, you know, I do this one, and then the model said, okay, and they put it on the table.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It starts from scratch. So obviously, if you do that one, it's not going to be like the sculpt, even if you're a really good model, because you're going to put more of what you want to do.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, you have to kind of step back with the ego and follow the plan that was set from the beginning. And I think in Spider-Man, they set this kind of path.
Yep.
And you can see the path at the end.
Yeah.
And that is really... Especially because we put a lot of effort, you know. It's not easy to do this kind of job. We try to make happy like 12 people with mm-hmm. different tastes, different position. Because yep. then there are the position in the studio. So I'm a character designer. I'm production. I'm on top of you. Then the director is on top of the production design. So this kind of hierarchy. So try to make happy everybody. Then the Marvel people. You know, it wasn't easy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you see that, you know, all this effort, all this. Fight, labor went in the right direction is really nice, yeah, nice feeling, and and especially when you see people that they recognize and they appreciate what you did,
yeah,
nice. Really,
well, it sounded like really you did cool. Because you know they're saying like you yeah. want to see your sculpture move, you know.
And that was one of the few projects was really really close,
right.
The Spider-Man is really, really close. I can see my sculpture.
Yeah.
It's funny because they redid the pose with the final model exactly like the pose of the sculpt.
Oh, really?
To show the director. Yeah.
Nice.
To show the director was 1-to-1.
Uh-huh.
And they did it for Spider-Man, Wanda, and the Goblin, the Green Goblin.
Yeah. Wow.
I did only 3 sculpts for the show.
Okay.
And then, maybe we're going to do more sculpts for the second show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think it's really cool. I think it's really great that the studios still look at traditional sculpting
yeah.
in a lot of ways. I think you're right that the tactile nature of it makes it feel, especially for characters, right? If it's a character.
Yeah, the character is more important.
It's more important. You know, if you did a tree, now.
But it depends, because if the tree is stylized, you know, the movie, the tree is the main
character, right.
You have to approach it as the main character in the
right.
same way, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely.
No, like Lord of the Rings, they did a lot of sculpture for the practical CG stuff.
Right.
Even to visualize, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's easier when you have a real set.
Yeah.
You can see. And then depend from the director, you know.
Yeah.
New director, they like to have the VR, or they like to do the previs in CG.
Do you think that you're seeing more VR used for, like, concept stuff?
I saw friends that use the VR, and then I think... For concepting, I think it's a good tool.
Okay.
Even for director to be in the set.
Okay. Yes. To be in the set, absolutely.
And then you can see, maybe you move around, you start to see the relation. If it's live action, you can see the relationship, or even for animation, you know, animation,
right.
Maybe you can do, maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking about dragons now, maybe you see the fly of these dragons, so you are on the dragon, or Avatar, when it came out,
right.
Avatar, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure, you know, it's helpful for the directors, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's the story, you know. If the story is strong, you can find always a solution
sure.
to achieve the story. It's all about the story, you know, at the end, you know. We can do visually really amazing stuff, but then the movie's crap.
Right. Well, how do you feel that your sculptures contribute to the story? You try to incorporate parts of the story into the sculptures that you do, right?
I see my step is more like an influence, you know.
It's part of it.
It's an influence for the director to maybe think something else, you know.
Right.
Because it happened with one director that we were doing something and I did something really quick, and then he liked it and they used that one. He kind of gave an idea to develop a little part of the story.
Right.
Based on that one.
It was an influence.
It was an influence, yeah.
Obviously.
It can go in the right way, or it can go maybe he has this influence, goes in the right the direction, then he's losing the direction, you know. It could be
right.
That one too,
right?
You hope not, but you know, but obviously the director should have a strong vision, and then you help him,
right,
with this three-dimensional object to feel, to taste how it's going to be the final one, you know.
Right.
That is a really cool feeling.
That's
when
nice.
You see people that are really, especially when they tell you, no, Andrea, we want to have your take. Use the drawing as a starting point, but do your take.
Yeah.
And it happened, you know, lately I did some job for Warner Brothers. They're working a project and they asked me, no, we want to have your take on this take.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, you know, it means that they like what I can bring on the table.
Yes.
And it's really, nice, you know, especially after all this year, appreciation of your work.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a cool feeling.
What is your thoughts on it when you're doing that? You're trying to.
Sometimes it's kind of intimidating, you know, because, you know, they give you free go.
Right.
Sometimes, okay, so I hope I don't screw up, you know. I hope don't. Obviously, there is always I'm intimidating, but at the same time challenging. I like the challenge, to be challenged on something that maybe I never did. For example, I work on a project for Disney, and I don't like to do kind of round shapes, right? Round form.
Okay.
And this project was Mickey Mouse in the 1930s. It was a short.
Uh huh.
And it was they were using the sculpt for the CG.
Okay.
And then, but the character was really round. You know, Mickey Mouse, the Minnie, you know.
Yeah, they're round.
Pete, they're really round.
Yeah. But
to find something expressive in roundness is not easy, especially because in the 1930s they were cheating with the ears.
Yeah.
So Eric Goldberg, there was the designer, said, no,
So
you want to have the sculpt that looks like a 2D, but it's 3D, so. And then it's more like a mindset. Try to find the right click, the right way out to express.
Right.
And that is the challenge. That is the fun. That was the nice time. And then I started to appreciate more doing round stuff after that one.
Yeah, okay.
It's funny. It's funny because I saw the beauty of doing round shapes.
Yes.
More than angular shapes. Because sometimes round shapes, they are more difficult.
Yeah.
Make something pleasurable than when you have a lot of angles, a lot of planes, a lot of change of planes.
Okay.
It's easier.
But it's a different
than,
it's a different emotion you get from
and the mindset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. When I work for Tonko House, you know, they on the Dam Keeper, their characters are really simpler.
Okay.
Simpler shape. But then they're appealing at the same time.
Right.
So you have to try to find the appealing in the simpler form, in the round form.
Right. You've done stuff for games, stuff, right?
I did for games too. I worked on Bioshock 2.
Oh, nice.
I did, I was working. That was a work that I did all completely in CG. But then at the end of the show, they asked me to do like a prototype of Big Sister.
Okay.
So I did a sculpt of the main character, you know, in a pose for the crew.
Right.
And then I work on, The Witness. It's a puzzle game that came out 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
It was over there. It's funny. They hired me as a sculptor. I thought it was a traditional sculptor, but they were meaning like a sculptor for CG, like a CG modeler.
CG modeler.
So I was okay. So I did a test in ZBrush, and then we found the style of the because they were approaching the character as a traditional sculpture. Almost like a sculpture, but the sculpture has to tell a story behind to resolve the puzzle.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting because they were giving me like a few notes on the character. So I have to design the character in the modern time, but it was feeling like old time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool, process. And I did like 60 characters in CG.
Yeah,
in ZBrush was an interesting project.
So you didn't do any traditional stuff.
No, I did all the CG there.
Okay.
But they want to have the look, the look of the, almost like the Russian sculpture turn of the century, really like the deco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Faceted, yeah. It was kind of a cool project.
Interesting.
No, in a way, no. In the last 8 years, I'm freelancer, so I'm able to work in more projects. At the same time.
Where do you live? You live in Italy?
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
In the Bay Area.
Yeah.
I'm living in America.
Yeah.
But no, for example, I'm working for a company in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So once a month I go down and I show the work.
Okay.
Even now with the scan, with the CG scan, I can scan the sculpt, send the OBJ file to them, and then they can see.
They can look at it, yeah.
They can look at it, so they can see exactly how it is. Because sometimes I take picture of the sculpt or video, mm-hmm. do like a little editing, a different view, different turnaround, yeah. so details, so they can see. But I noticed that it's difficult for them to understand sometimes,
yeah.
even with the video and the picture. So yeah. I'm implementing the CG scan, and it's a plus for them.
I think you're absolutely right. When I look at your sculptures, they're not the same as photographs. You know what I mean? The experience is very
yeah.
different.
When you see from live, it's
yeah,
different.
It's yeah. different. So I don't think I can imagine, even if you do make an OBJ from the scan and they're just tumbling around in the view, that's not going to be the same experience.
It's not the same, but maybe it's more, with the picture, they can get a little bit more.
Right.
And sometimes it's funny because, you know, when they see the picture, they ask me to change. And then I say, no, wait a moment. Let me show you the real one. So last time I went down to Los Angeles, I showed the real one, and they saw it. Mm-hmm. So they was right. Don't
right.
change it.
Yeah, yeah,
fortunately,
yeah.
Stop. Don't change it now because I show you.
There's so
I guarantee
much...
you that, yes, because sometimes, you know, even the perspective, you know, the, how you put the
oh,
camera,
yeah.
you know, the flatness, you know.
Or yes, or what
the lighting,
what
know?
Lens you use, right?
Yeah, the lens you use. Usually I use a long lens, so I can
so
kind
you
of,
can compress
so
it.
It's more compressed.
What lens do you
so
use?
So it's more like 85.
Okay, that's what I was going to do, because I was doing that.
50, you know, depend.
Whenever I do, you know, renderings of humans and
yeah.
stuff, if you start to use like a 35 millimeter lens,
right, yeah.
yeah, their nose is going to be look
yeah.
huge, right?
And then they're going to say it's too big, it's too
small. No. And then it's like, no.
Yeah.
But if you make it an 85,
yeah.
then it's a big difference, yeah.
Sometimes I even use the topographic, orthographic view.
Orthographic view, right.
So it's more flat.
Yeah, because that's how your
Data
eye
you,
sees it.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's yeah, you have to find the good balance for you to sell that year.
Right.
To sell that the stuff that you're doing is good.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when you work remotely.
Yeah. It's interesting. Going back to like something you said a while ago, I was just thinking about it. You know, talking about, you know, how you build your own narrative while you're sculpting, right? So you have something based on the character designer or whoever you're doing, but then you... As you start to develop it, you build your own narrative on top of that to
yeah.
supplement, because there maybe parts of the story are missing that
yeah.
they told you, and you're like, but I need some information.
Well, maybe you put some details that they didn't even think about, and then
right.
that is going to help them, you know.
Yes.
But because it's helping me. If I think that, you know, maybe I think that this element can help me to
right.
visualize, to sell this character.
Right. Well, I did a podcast with one of the guys who worked on Thanos on Avengers, right?
Yeah.
But he was doing a lot of the modeling and the textures for it, right?
Okay.
And so much as he was doing it, he was really thinking about the story of Thanos, which
no,
is not all in there, right?
Yeah.
So it was like he was doing like just the hands, right? And he had like just little cuts, right?
Yeah.
And then the nails were like, this is the hands of a warrior
yeah.
who's been in many battles.
So it's all built up. You know,
and so he's thinking, what would happen in that hand? Like,
yeah.
what kind of stuff? And you can't just put a bunch of scratches.
No.
Right? You have to think about why they're there, everything that's there. And this is just the texture maps, you know? So
if everybody thinks in this direction,
yeah.
you know, it's going to be something unique. You know?
Everyone has a part of the story that
yeah.
they developed
yeah.
that goes well beyond.
Even more believable, because when he showed this hand to the director, he said, yeah, this is the hand of the guy.
Yeah.
I can see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think it's so good that people, you know, you can build so much narrative into things that are not necessarily said, you know?
Yeah.
So it's part of this. It becomes part of the story.
Or maybe sometimes you even do less, and you the person that is looking at your sculpt or your painting,
right.
he can feel with his
feel with his own.
We can feel with his own imagination,
right?
And I like that. Even when you see a movie that it's open,
right?
There's not maybe the end is a little bit confusing, or you don't know where it can go. It can go either way,
right?
And I like that because it's kind of you get stimulated. You when you go out to the cinema, you start to think about even more.
Yeah, yeah.
You appreciate even more.
Yeah.
I like the kind of, it's like when you go in a museum, you see, for this I'm leaving more on the roughness.
Yeah.
Because it kind of give more interpretation.
I was thinking, you did stuff on How to Train Your Dragon.
I did the collaboration with Nicolas Marleon
yeah.
on the dragon, yeah.
But that, I mean, I think, you know, just thinking about that, you hear some parts of the story about Toothless, right?
Yeah.
As an example, but... So many people have so many theories about Toothless that are not said in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, he's like a cat, or he's doing this, or doing that. Like, all the things that are inferred, and all of it's in your imagination, and none of it's literally told you in the story, but there's something about the way something looks that someone put in there that you pick up on, yeah, and you become part of that story.
And that, I think that is the coolest, of our job, you know.
Yeah, if it's done well, right? Because otherwise it's just plain.
Yeah, but you do it because you think that, because you have the, as you said, you're done well, but you wouldn't do it if you don't know how to do it. You know what
right.
I mean? It's going to be something that is doesn't make sense, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
No, that was a collaboration with Nico. You know, we are friends since a long time. So, that was the first design that he got approved in the movie. So for him, he was really attached to the drawing.
Oh, that's
design.
Great.
It was,
That's great.
I learned a lot from him, so it was really. And this, as I told you before, I like the collaboration. This was a really nice collaboration.
That's great. Yeah. It's hard to think of a sculptor being collaborative, but it's great to hear that.
I think for me, it's the base. You know, it's the key. You know?
Yeah.
It become like you work on some on a friend project. You know.
Right.
You work with friends.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite projects do you think you can do? I know there's probably a lot of them, but
each project is different. You know, each project was there's some problem, there's some really nice moments.
Yeah.
So I learned from all the projects. For example, Spider-Man was a surprise because I worked like 2 years before the movie came out.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I'm not a really big superhero fan.
Okay.
When they asked me to do Spider-Man, I said, oh, jeez, I'm Spider-Man.
Okay.
Then I was thinking about the Mickey Mouse too. I said, okay, maybe if I approach in a different, okay, I'm not a superhero fan, but I can appreciate, the way, because I like the design, so I can appreciate his drawing and try to make sure that we do something different.
Yep.
And then when the movie came out, when I saw the stuff, it was really impressed. It was really, wow. I was blown away. And it was a revelation. You know, it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice when you don't expect, and then something came out, it's good. People respond, and they won the Oscar too. So it was it's nice to be part. And then when the director tell you, Andrea, thanks to you, you were a big step of this creation of the style of the. It's nice. You know, it was a nice compliment.
It was a surprising movie.
Was a surprise for me. It was a surprising movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was everyone's a little bit surprised.
Especially because I saw it at Pixar before the movie came out. With the directors were there,
right
in front of this audience. It was a pretty tough audience.
Uh-huh.
The Pixar guys. So, and the end was like a standing ovation. Everybody was really quiet.
Right.
And then they start to clap. Everybody really respond. And
yeah.
And then when I saw it, I told the guys and the directors, you're gonna be. I'm sure you're gonna win the Oscar. I told in December before the movie came out. They won the Oscar. I was really.
Yeah.
No, because I could feel it was something different.
Oh yeah.
Something that could push the boundary. Like when I start to go to festival, I saw Nightmare Before Christmas in the 90s, and that was a changing point movie for a lot of art director, production designer for as a visual.
Right.
And that is kind of cool when you bring the entertainment in one direction. And now I saw the other studio, they try to emulate the kind of Spider-Man way out to do movies.
Right.
Maybe the animation is more snappy, because the animation was really snappy compared to Dreamers or Pixar. Even the way how they stylize the environment.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice when you have an edgy movie that it can bring the industry in another direction, try to experiment more.
Right.
Because the one thing that I've seen in all this company that I think we are missing the experimentation. We are missing the take a risk.
Well, it's hard for studios to take a risk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but even small studio like a new studio that they open, they play safe.
Yeah.
You should try to push at least a couple of movies and then play safe with other movies. You know what I mean? Because the Dreamers, when I started, they were taking risks.
Sure.
The Prince of Egypt, El Dorado, Simbad. Each movie was completely different.
Yeah. You worked on Prince of Egypt?
I was supposed to work. I worked in the last 3 months, the production.
Okay.
But not. I work already on El Dorado. Yeah.
Right.
Start on El Dorado, Dreamers. Yeah.
That you
could feel that everybody was believing doing something new.
That's awesome.
I never had the same. No, maybe I had the same feeling on another project. Maybe because it was the first time that I was doing stop motion.
Right.
So was a different medium, different for a sculptor to work on a stop motion is the, you know, is the ideal. Ultimate,
yeah.
It's like if you like
really
to,
your sculpture really is moving.
yeah, because it's the one that you're gonna see. Yeah, that is the character. So that was pretty impressive. Unfortunately, the movie never came out, but you know.
Okay.
You worked two and a half years on this movie, and but we did a good job.
Okay.
it's kind of frustrating, you know, when you see that you can see the potential, and it's funny because every time I show the sculpt around, the people say, "My, this is nice. I want to see this more." But yeah, unfortunately, you know, nobody.
Yeah, it's okay. It happens.
It happens.
Yeah. Well, we're actually over an hour already, which is great.
We went too far.
Okay. No, we didn't. No. I go longer sometimes if I have to. But I do want to know, is there anything you can talk about? You can maybe not talk too much about the projects you're doing, but you can talk about some of the things, like some of the studios. You must be doing a lot of work at this point, right?
Yeah, as I told you before, now after Spider-Man, the work really started to kick in. I'm working for Sony.
Right.
I'm doing like one sculpt for Spider-Man. I don't know if they're going to use it for the marketing or whatever. Then I work for Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right now, is the studio that is there's a big demand.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to go there.
Yeah.
Because especially it's a new studio, so they want to start to do new projects.
New content.
Mm-hmm. You know, they need a lot of content, especially you know for the streaming.
Yeah.
And it's kind of I kind of like the format of the streaming.
Yeah.
In a way, you're gonna have a bigger audience than a cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
So more people gonna go see your movie.
Yeah.
Because they're from home, you know, and that's why I'm working for them. Then I have some personal project. I'm traveling, do workshops.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to London in November, to the workshop there.
Well, I think it's great, you know, going back to where we started, it's really great that you're taking on this knowledge and teaching people as well. I think it's cool.
Thank you. I told the, you know, the student or people that come to my lecture that I'm here because, I'm still doing it because of these people, that they come to the lecture.
Nice.
As I told you before, they give me the energy to keep doing this stuff. Sometimes I say, but why am I doing this stuff? You know, I feel like a dinosaur in this kind of high-tech environment.
Right.
But, you know, as I told you before, the expression or the feeling, when I see people, they open the eyes, they start to feel it.
Yep.
This kind of energy is really important for me to keep going. I'm taking this energy and I'm putting it on the world for companies, too.
Yeah.
Especially see the company, they really respond on the doing more maquettes.
Yeah.
It's really gratifying, you know, because I put a lot of, a lot of effort to try still pushing.
Yeah,
because I have a lot of friends that they were doing traditional, that they were traditional sculptor. They move, they abandon traditional sculpting. They just do CG.
Right, that's a shame.
It's a shame, yeah. Because with the CG, even with traditional animation, you can see the animation, traditional animation, it kind of level everything. CG level everything.
Right. Yeah.
You don't see anymore James Buster animation. It was a 2D with the CG because everybody's you can blend a lot.
Yeah.
So before you had to be honest, to be a traditional artist was a lot of studying behind to reach the point, you know.
Okay.
I remember when you need to have a really, really good portfolio to get through the selection, you know.
Yep.
I'm sure now too, but it is more even the studio, they can go to find a cheaper 3D model, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's all about saving money, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. I think it's great. I think it's really cool that you're still doing the things you do. I think that, I look forward to seeing you in a gallery. Are you going to do stuff in a gallery?
Yeah, I'm going to do some. So the idea this year was to do a small workshop.
Yeah.
So to give the people, 10, 20 people, the feeling how you set up a sculpt and how you build an armature, how you do the next level, next stage. So that was the idea with Andre. We talked about that.
Okay.
To try to do something. Last year I did more like a demo, and then people start to sculpt because it was kind of amazing, you know, because they were looking at me and then they wanted to sculpt for all the three days or four days.
Right.
They were sculpting every day.
Yeah.
So it was pretty demanding on my side, but you know, it was nice to feel that
you have to help them and like
you feel that you have to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
So this year is more like this idea to have a small workshop and try to give something
okay.
to the audience. And then, then I want to thank you for this interview. It was nice. It's nice that I catch your attention, you know.
Yeah, no.
No, it's kind of cool that you give the opportunity to people to know a little bit more what I'm doing.
Well, I think it's great that people need to see that stuff and understand it. And I think it's important for them to be able to take it and say, hey, you know, maybe I should start looking at sculpting, right? Yeah. And maybe it's something that's missing from the process.
The pipeline, yeah.
Yeah, pipeline.
I think it's important. Yeah.
So it's really good.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. This has been awesome. And I will, I'll let you know when it comes out, but I'm going to, I'll be spending time, when you're there in the room and trying to see if I can take some pictures of the stuff you guys did.
Yeah, then you can post it, yes.
Yeah. Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.